Welcome to Combat Theory Presents, a weekly podcast about all things martial arts, fight science, and combat sports. I'm your co-host, Sammy Ryan, and our latest episode starts now.
All right, guys, welcome to the latest episode of Combat Theory Presents, as my lovely co-host, Sammy Ryan, who is absent today, said. We are joined by the very famous Calcucate.
So famous.
So I've talked about you on the podcast like four times.
Oh.
Yeah, I really have. Like, you don't watch the podcast. She doesn't, obviously, you don't watch the podcast because you would know that. But yeah, I've mentioned you on the podcast like four times.
You just like my handle.
Well, first off, yes, I love your handle because I think it's hilarious. And two, I actually watch your content on TikTok and I think it's really good. It's super, like, I think it's very subtle. Like, it's not down your throat. Like, it's not like forceful. It's very intellectual. It's about martial arts. It's a unique perspective, which I absolutely love. And like I was saying earlier, I think that often, you know, when you think about martial arts, it's not like you don't think about a diverse population. And that's the thing about martial arts is truthful, is that people from all walks of life are involved in martial arts. You know, they say all the time that, you know, when you go to a gym, you're getting people that are, you know, you get police officers and you get guys that are like running from the law. Like, it's like an amazing moment where you get a bunch of people that get together and they don't, or it should be, they don't care about anything else except for that time they're on the mat, you know? So I don't know. I like your content. And you're like TikTok famous. So you're going to, you know.
I have like 5,000 followers. That's not TikTok famous.
You know how many followers I have? Like seven. I have seven TikTok followers, and I think three of them are my mom because she only knows how to set up accounts.
You want to know what content does really great for me? Is when I'm getting armbarred by teenagers. Those are the ones that take off.
I that or the ones where you're like you're getting mad at like someone's comment. Not getting mad, but like you're like, this is the dumbest comment ever.
I have never once said that phrase.
No. I see it in your eyes.
I don't call people stupid.
Maybe I'm a bad person. So, Calcucate. Can I call you Kate? Is that okay?
That's fine.
Kate. How did you get involved in martial arts?
So, this is going to be a semi-long story, if you're ready for it.
That is what we do here. Long
Great.
Stories.
So, before I started CrossFit, so, like, my fitness lifestyle started in CrossFit. I was in a terrible relationship, very
okay.
controlling.
I'm sorry if they're listening.
I would hope not. And I, before we found CrossFit, I wanted to learn how to fight. And so I told my then husband that I wanted to learn how to fight. And he said, there's no point because you're not aggressive enough to be good at it.
Ooh. All right. So it started off well.
So spite is the answer of why.
Spite's powerful, man.
It is. And then I started out at an MMA gym doing jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai.
Okay.
And continuing with CrossFit.
All right.
And I was really, really strong because of CrossFit.
Sure.
And it happened to ramp up really fast in jiu-jitsu. I hated Muay Thai.
All right. I don't take it personally.
I think it's awful, and
so happy to hear that.
Yeah, I'm just bad at it.
Okay, I mean, but you must have been bad at jiu-jitsu at when you first started.
I'm still bad at jiu-jitsu.
Why do you like it more than Muay Thai?
I can slow it down.
Fair. Okay.
It's a very logical sport. I'm a software engineer, so the way my brain works is mostly the way someone codes.
Okay.
So when things are logical and there is a really specific answer for a specific question, I can work with that.
I think that's very interesting because I think that some of the highest level competitors that I've met in jiu-jitsu are very like almost introverted, like
very
software-y engineer typed, where I think a lot of guys in Muay Thai, and listen, I do Muay Thai, they're like, I want to hit with brick. Like that's kind of the mentality that they have, which is interesting because jiu-jitsu is definitely a chess match. You know, I say that Muay Thai is often like we're playing checkers. I'm sure there's a lot of Muay Thai listeners that are going to hate me, but I like Muay Thai better. I've never been willing to give jiu-jitsu the headspace that it deserves or that it probably needs.
And it's so fun.
Lies. So what What weight class did you compete at when you first started? Do you remember?
I have been the same weight class all the way through. It is different based on the different tournaments, but it's roughly around 115,
115, okay. So you're on the smaller side of competing.
It is the second lowest weight class.
All right. You do cut down to that, or do you kind of walk around there?
I walk at about 116 to 118.
Okay.
So it depends on...
Yeah, the tournament, when the weigh-ins are, all that other stuff.
Right.
Very cool, very cool. So did you compete as a white belt? When did you start competing?
I started competing 3 months in.
All right. Wow. Okay. That's quick.
And I won.
Nice. Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
It was a good thing. I think I won because I was strong.
Okay.
So I competed in CrossFit all the time.
Yeah.
And I had just done my first individual CrossFit competition. Everything else had been teams. And actually, Brian Heenan, he was a coach at SBG, but he was like my... He took me under his wing as his white belt and taught me things that I wasn't getting in class.
All right.
He's the reason why I actually stuck with this sport. But he showed up to that CrossFit competition and watched me compete and was like, you have a lot of heart for doing this. And I can't wait to see you compete in jiu-jitsu. So I said, okay, when is the next tournament?
Do you remember what tournament that was?
It was Naga.
Naga, okay. All right, very cool.
It was Naga. I had two opponents and beat both of them on points 5-0 because I got a sweep and passed their guard, and that was it. Because that was all I could do.
That's all you had.
That's all I had. All right. But it worked. And then I got addicted.
Okay.
I really like competition in general, just in life. So that is, it was great. And I did that. I did Copa and Chick Jitsu and New Breed. And then the world shut down.
Fair, fair. So let's go back. Let's go back a little bit. Did you play sports before that? Obviously you're in CrossFit, and CrossFit does have the games.
I did pole fitness.
Okay, very cool.
So that was pre-CrossFit. But no, not really. Growing up, I did a little bit of soccer, but I was a theater kid.
All right, very interesting. I guess that's competitive. Did you do like...
I did competitions.
Yes, of course. Very cool, very cool. So... What is it do you think that you, like, was it the competitive nature of jiu-jitsu that has kept you involved?
It's the meritocracy of it all.
Okay, big word.
You can't fake it.
All right.
Like, you're either going to get choked out or you're not. Or you're going to be the one applying the submission or you're not.
Yeah.
There's no way to fake that. You just have to work and you just have to learn. As soon as I found out that I could learn from other sources, like not just going to class, but having video instructionals and things like that, that opened up a whole new world of just so much information that I can absorb quickly and then apply quickly.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in kind of the martial arts world, that's changed drastically because it used to be that people that watched like videos or learned from videos, we would kind of like poo-poo them.
Yeah.
But like the truth is that like there's so much great information out there and there's so many amazing sources. And that's one of the things I tell people all the time. It's like we talked about this on my last episode. Like film study is incredibly important. Like watching great people do this, whether it's from them in competition or it's them doing instructionals or it's them showing something on Instagram. Like you can get a lot of great information from that, obviously. You still need to go back to the gym. You still need to drill it. You still need to have great training partners. I'm not saying that you can learn martial arts online, people, please. But I think that it's underrated when people don't realize that, like, the number one thing people ask me is, like, what can I work on outside of the gym? And I'm like, watch fights, watch competitions, like, watch instructionals that are available online. Like, there's so much. Are you having trouble with this? Go on YouTube and look at 10 different people teach it and see how they teach it, because one of them might connect with you in a way that I'm not. How long were you a white belt for?
A year.
About a year. Yeah, so that's pretty good. Do you feel like it was longer than you wanted? Do you feel like you wish...
It was much shorter than I wanted.
Yeah.
And I want to have my blue belt for 4 years. I hated that they promoted me.
All right.
First of all, they promoted me 10 days before a tournament. So
okay,
that
that's
was... Granted, I was signed up for several, so they weren't ever going to get a shot to do that. That wasn't then. I don't think I was ready for a blue belt. I think they saw me win a lot of tournaments and say, yep, that's it. You're done with white belt. Go on and fight a bunch of people that have like 60 more years of experience than you do. But it forced me to pick up the game a lot faster.
Now, you train at a couple of different gyms. Is that correct?
A lot of gyms.
Yeah. Why is that?
I need certain training partners at certain times. When I am just starting a different series or I want to focus on a certain technique, I need to have bodies that are going to work with me on that.
All right.
And unfortunately, the women that are in the sport in Central Florida are scattered all around the gyms. They are all amazing, though, and are willing to just work with me whenever. They're like, yeah, come out to this class, come out to that class. And everyone's just super welcoming. I pay drop-in fees and just go where I can.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, though.
It is. I think I was thinking about this. I had a super fight back in February, it must have been. And so I was trying a lot of new stuff because I'm very inept at like heel hooks and leg locks like that because I normally do IBJJF stuff where can't do that. I'm a straight ankle lock person. That's it. So I was working on, this is going to be controversial for the jiu-jitsu people.
Oh,
sorry. The Mikey lock.
Okay.
Mikey Musumeci named this after himself. Yeah. So everyone hates when I call it that. But I was working on that. And so it was just a fun thing I was trying to pick up in 2 weeks and might as well try to do it in a match. So I needed people that did leg stuff, that were going to heel hook me, that were going to toe hold me. Because the people that I was going with at other gyms, they don't work on that stuff. So I have to go to see those other people. I worked with a lot of MMA people because they were more aggressive.
Yeah.
And the way that my opponent was going to be. So it was all great.
This is crazy. I trained with Mikey when he was a blue belt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Baby Mikey.
Yeah. And then he was here for, was Worlds here last year? Was that last year or the year before?
Year before.
He was here and he came and hung out with us for a day or two. I didn't train with him then, but he was at the gym, which was cool. But
I met him in Nashville.
Yeah. He's unique.
I love the way he teaches everything. His brain works the same as mine,
similar
mostly,
for sure.
It's, he says that he wants to give you this cookbook of recipes to get this submission or position, and every single thing has an answer. That's, I just love his instructionals.
Yeah. So how'd you do at the tournament? Did you pull off the Mikey?
I did not. I had her leg for a good 3 minutes.
All right.
I did not finish it. I watched that back and definitely had a chance where I should have just ripped it. But my legs weren't where I wanted them.
Okay.
So I was concerned about having that control.
I've had that same problem. My legs are just below me. And sometimes I think if they're above me, I would be able to kick much better than I kick. And it's upsetting, frankly, to be honest with you. It's
like they just stay there. It's very upsetting. Yeah. And then that one I'm upset with. It ended up being a draw because it was a submission only match. She passed my guard after I couldn't get her leg again. And she thinks that she dominated that match. So I
take it you think differently.
It was at least even. But she was just running away from me for 3 minutes.
Oh, my God. If you're listening, stop running, man. Why were you doing that? So I guess there's a bunch I can unpack there. Is there, in jiu-jitsu, is there a rule set that you prefer?
Okay. Complicated answer-ish.
Yeah, for sure.
I enjoy points because it rewards good jiu-jitsu most of the time. You can definitely play the point system so that you know more things than your opponent and you can stall until you're about to get a stalling point and then move.
Yeah.
And that's cheap. But in a lot of these submission-only events that I keep seeing, it's only 5 minutes in a match and then it has overtime, which is honestly pretty arbitrary. Even EBI rules are just so arbitrary. Like, you just start, at least those start on the ground. The one I most recently was at, it was first to a takedown was the overtime rule. When it's jiu-jitsu, that's stupid.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. No, you can. I mean, why not, you know?
So I really enjoy when things have very clear rule sets.
Sure.
because I can know that.
Yeah.
If something is very is gray, I can't know what which way it's going to go. So I enjoy IBJJF, and everyone's going to hate me for saying that.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they will. They a lot of people just can't stand how strict they are. I like that part.
I think, but so I'm not a jiu-jitsu competitor. I've been around for a long time. I think that for me, I'm kind of the same way though, because I want the more defined the rule set, the more that we can base can follow the rules, but then it also means the more I can manipulate the rules. You know what I mean? And I want to understand what the rules are, right? The nature of the game has rules, right? And when the rules are veritable, it becomes problematic, right? So, you know, like I like tournaments where, like I like Muay Thai tournaments where we have to wear a very specific type of outfit, or we have to wear a very specific type of glove, because that way we're leveling the playing field and it's very, very simple. And often we'll see coaches that don't understand the rule set, and because of that, their fighters struggle. Like, you have to understand the rule set. And we see that even at the highest level where guys are fighting in the UFC and then they transfer to, like, one championship and they don't understand, like, oh, I can get kneed on the ground now. This is a big problem. And because they don't understand that that understanding of rule set, it's problematic. How long total have you been competing now?
I guess it's been, like, 2 years-ish. I've been training for 2.5.
All right.
So I guess two years, 3 months. taking a lot of time off, though, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. So you've had some injuries.
Yeah. Too many, one would say.
You know, it's funny. Do you know who Roy Dean is? He's a black belt out of California.
No.
He's kind of like on the, I don't know that he's very popular right now, but he has this saying where he's like, you're not even a blue belt until you've had a major injury. Because when it comes to jiu-jitsu especially, it's like most people give up. Obviously, in any martial arts, most people give up, right? And there's injuries in jiu-jitsu. And a lot of times those injuries can be kind of devastating. And then people just never come back. So his whole thing is if you have an injury and you heal from it and then you return to it, then obviously you must like it. So what kind of injuries have you had?
When I was a very baby white belt and I was still doing Muay Thai, I got kicked really hard in the IT band and I was out for a month.
Okay.
With that. And then I've had back injuries and neck injuries before. The worst one besides what I'm dealing with right now, it was just a pinched nerve really, but all down this arm. And that was last year in 2021, I did 19 IBJJF tournaments.
You did 19 tournaments?
19.
Okay.
And I was traveling. So I would fly into a city Saturday morning, go directly to the event, compete the next day at the second event, fly out and get home before work on Monday.
Wild. Okay.
It was so much fun. I am so glad that I was able to do that last year. But in Austin... last year, I had texted my PT before we took off. And I'm like, hey, can you see me when I get home? Because level 10 pain right now. And she said, I cannot go to a doctor. So I went to a doctor for that. And he just prescribed PT. So I went back to her. Basically, the whole thing was I couldn't reach the stability with my neck muscles to prevent this from happening again if I continued to train and I continued to compete without first solving that problem. So I said, okay, I have 4 more tournaments left, so I'm just going to do those. The next one was Pan Am, and I did that and broke my finger.
Okay.
So that took me out for 4 months. All of the next stuff healed, good to go, except I was out for 4 months because my...
finger was broken.
Yeah, and it was like... not at the joint, but the very tip of the finger was just completely separated. So it just took a really long time for it to get back. That was very frustrating. Came back, and now a very stupid white belt tried to rip my head off, and I have a herniated disc at C5, C6, and I have surgery scheduled next month.
Are they doing a fusion?
No, thank God. They're doing a disc replacement, so I'll have full mobility.
Okay.
If I did a fusion, I would probably not be able to train ever again.
Yeah. So I guess you know, and we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but I guess my first question would be, did you have a lot of injuries when you were doing CrossFit or not really?
Zero.
Zero injuries. So obviously there's definitely injuries in all sports.
Yes.
Do you think that you are having injuries that are more intense or more common than other competitors or other people at your level?
I think because I compete so much and I train so much to be able to compete that it's just going to be more prevalent.
Okay.
Just what I'm putting my body through is just, that's how it's going to be.
Now, I know you train in a lot of different gyms. How picky are you about like who you roll with, who you drill with?
Very, and I have a rule, and my rule is that I don't roll with white belt males that I don't know.
Okay.
Or at least haven't watched rolled some.
Yeah.
And I broke that rule.
Yeah.
I broke the rule and I am paying for it. So that is my advice to every female grappler ever is just don't roll with white belt men that you don't know. And I hate to be that person that's like, hey, don't roll with guys. But it's just so dangerous. We don't have the strength or the technique yet to prevent those injuries. And even at the blue belt level, and I don't think I'm particularly good, but I don't have those techniques to be able to prevent a lot of this.
I think that, God, I might get some hate from the jiu-jitsu community on this. I think that the thing that is, I think what they sell jiu-jitsu as is that, you know, it's a game of technique and leverage and position. And I think that is very true. I do believe that to be very true. But at the base level of any form of fighting, the physically stronger, more aggressive person will typically win. Now, eventually, as your level of skill improves, you can mitigate some of that, right? But there's a reason that most combat sports are weight class based sports.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's something that, like, me and my gym, I try to be very specific about who my people train with. So if I have a guy that's 115 pounds, he probably doesn't need to be drilling with a dude that weighs 200 pounds. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense for either of them. And that has nothing to do with gender. That has more to do with just weight in general, you know?
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, like anything else in jiu-jitsu, unfortunately, if somebody's just kind of, I mean, just significantly stronger than you and they are a similar skill level as you, it's hard not to at least be kind of stalled out by them because you if they're
it
not letting you
difference.
Work. Yeah. But, I mean, that might get me some internet hate. I don't know more than you saying how much you love IBJJF or...
Oh, no, that one's going to get
you
the
think
most.
Be the ultimate one?
Yeah. Because at least what you're saying, that holds a lot of truth.
Say you're admitting that, but I think there's going to be some dudes like, no, bro, jiu-jitsu, you don't need. You can do technique.
The second that your technique is at the same level as someone else's, weight and strength will come into play.
When all things are equal, conditioning is the ultimate determining factor of any type of fighting. You know, you could train all day, but if you have a heart attack in the process, like you can't fight. You know what I mean? Like, you need to be in good condition and understand technique as well. If you could go back and you could kind of start over, Would you make changes in your journey, in your martial arts journey?
I probably would have quit Muay Thai sooner.
Okay. Fuck you. No, that's fair. Why is that?
It took up a lot of my time. It took up a lot of my energy for jiu-jitsu because I was doing... I throw myself into the thing that I like. So I was doing a jiu-jitsu class, a Muay Thai class, a jiu-jitsu class 5 days a week. And then two of each on Saturday.
Okay.
So it was just, it was a lot in my body. And I was too prideful to think that wasn't going to catch up with me.
Do you feel that, especially now in today's climate, as a new student, when you walk into a martial arts school, that there is this pressure to be a multi-sport athlete?
No.
No. So what pressured you into doing jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai?
Oh, I wanted to do MMA.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the goal. Technically, eventually, I would like to do one amateur fight just to have it.
Yeah, no, I see. I get what you're saying.
But I just love jiu-jitsu, so that's where I stayed.
Sometimes I, like when my people, like everyone comes in, I think everyone comes in and they're like, I want to do MMA. And then often I'm like, okay, like what is your experience? Like, what are you good at? And if they've not really done anything, I try to get them to like kind of just, I don't want to say specialize, but find one thing that they enjoy more and start doing that and kind of focusing on that for a little bit, maybe a few months, 4 months, 5 months, and see if they enjoy doing that, if they want to do something else, if they want to add it in. But it's interesting that you got so like, how long did it take you to say like no more Muay Thai?
When I came back after quarantine.
Okay.
So I still did classes, like Zoom classes, was doing Muay Thai Zoom classes over quarantine.
All right.
And then when we got back, I was not as conditioned as before because there were no gyms open and I'm not that disciplined that I was doing everything on my own.
Sure.
So I couldn't handle it anyways.
Yeah.
And I preferred jiu-jitsu and I thought, why am I going to put myself through this stupid conditioning?
Now you've traveled a bunch. You've competed in a bunch of different places. When you travel, do you train in the other places that you travel to? Have you done that as well, or you just mostly compete?
When we're traveling to compete, we tend to not train there because we're only there for a short period of time.
Sure.
But we definitely, when we're going on vacation somewhere,
yeah,
we just pop into gyms. We took a road trip up the East Coast to Baltimore, so we stopped in at 5050 in Virginia. And then we went up to New York and stopped in Marcelo Garcia's.
Of course.
So those are like the big main ones that we stop in. But like we try to, if we're on actual vacation and we're not just there for a tournament, we definitely try to find a gym that's nearby.
So of all the places that you've competed in, was there a place that was like head and shoulders above for you?
Ooh. I love my city. So I love Orlando's.
Okay.
Culture for all of their tournaments.
This is, by the way, the first time anyone that lives in Orlando has ever said that.
I love Orlando.
Okay.
I think it's great. We have like a lot of different cultures in the area. I can go get like very authentic food from almost anywhere in the world within like an hour drive.
Did you grow up here?
I grew up in Florida, okay. Not specifically Orlando, but
central, south, north,
south and central.
South and central. Okay. So that's fair.
And then other places, okay, so I hated Miami as a tournament.
Okay.
We're
just going to piss everyone off that's listening to the podcast.
Just a different vibe. A more aggressive just vibe there. That's very vague and has no landing in anything. Austin was great.
Okay.
I loved Austin, but I loved Austin as a city. So I think it probably has a lot to do with the act, like the physical location of.
I got stuck in Austin, Texas for 4 months, and it was probably the coolest 4 months that I've had a pretty cool life. I've been in some cool places. I was in Austin by myself. Oh. So usually when I travel with people, and I'm going to be honest with you. I like to travel with people, and I was in Austin by myself. And I loved it. Like I wasn't doing martial arts or anything. I was just hanging out and the energy, like the vibe, like I was probably like 2010 or 2011, somewhere around there. And it was just absolutely the coolest like place that I've ever been. So I could see that. Now I follow you on social media. So you competed in Rome?
Yes.
That's awesome.
It was. That was a rough trip, but yeah. Beforehand. But competing there was amazing because it was the first tournament that they had in Europe since Corona happened.
Yeah.
So everyone came from everywhere that they could in Europe to compete at this thing. So it was really great.
What was the level of skill like?
Well, this was actually my first time in the Masters division because I am turning 30 this year. So that makes me eligible for Masters 1. So I was going against women that were my age for once.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit different because I wasn't going against these 17-year-olds that have been training for 10 years.
Sure, sure.
So my division specifically was not as troublesome as it has been.
Okay.
But there was a ton of amazing talent out there.
Yeah. Did you do anything fun while you were there?
We saw everything that a tourist would see.
Yeah, you did the touristy thing. That's super cool, man.
We did the full Colosseum tour with the underground and everything. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. What's the energy like in the Colosseum? Is it like, does it feel like that building is like, thousands and thousands and thousands of years old.
It's unreal. Just being there is very unreal. And everyone says that it seems smaller than you expect when you're there, but I didn't feel that at all.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not particularly drawn to Europe for any reason. Like, I've never really been like, oh, I want to go to Europe, you know, like, and I've had some opportunities to go to Europe and it's just not really on like my top five list of places that I want to go. But the Colosseum, if I could just hit the Colosseum like for one day, just because like it's such rich history and there's like amazing writings about the battles that they had there. And just like, you know, there's not a whole lot like when Rome fell. The level of technology was not like we did not reach that level of technology again until the 18th century, and Rome fell in like 500 to 600 like AD. So like the thought process that literally it took, I don't know, what is that, like, you know, 1500 years to get back to that level of technology is like absolutely wild. Like, there's these stories about they could fill the Colosseum up with water and they would have sea battles in the Colosseum and the water would turn red from blood. And that's like super morbid, but just the thought process that the Romans were able to develop an agricultural system and like an aquifer that they could literally pipe in water to this huge stadium, fill it, and then they would have, unfortunately, like prisoners fight to the death so intensely that it would like the water would turn color. I read that when I was in like, I don't know, like ninth grade. And I like,
stuck with you.
Yes, it's, people don't know this because I look great for 900 years old, but I literally read about that like 855 years ago and I've still remembered all of it, which is, that's amazing. That would be my one. If I could go for one day, I would go to Rome.
You can.
Yeah. Well, anything's possible, you know, but.
Before this injury happened, we were planning, maybe, to do the Dublin Open and then travel all the way to Barcelona to do the Masters European Championship.
Well, that would have been cool.
So we would, because it was one weekend after the other, so yeah. We were just going to take off like a week and a half and go do that.
Before you got involved in like CrossFit and martial arts, like what were you into? Did you have like hobbies that were outside of like school and stuff like that?
So before that, I did pole fitness.
Okay.
Before that, I read a lot.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing. And then musical theater. I auditioned for the local theater's season straight out of high school too. So I did have that.
Yeah. We were talking earlier on social media and you were saying that you felt, did you say hyper fixated on jiu-jitsu?
Yes.
Had you been like that about previous things?
CrossFit. I was as into CrossFit as I am into jiu-jitsu now.
But you don't do CrossFit anymore?
I'm not like a part of a box or anything.
Okay.
But once I can do anything again, I will do CrossFit workouts like once a week and then do powerlifting the rest.
What did you like about CrossFit?
The competition with yourself every day
okay.
was great. That has been the only time besides fighting now where I could push myself to a limit and then past it. And that's addicting.
Yeah.
To be able to find a limit and then get over it.
There is something about like, we talked about this on the last episode where it's like breaking through that mental barrier, that wall of like, I can't do this. And then discovering like, actually I can. That is a very, like, almost addictive feeling sometimes.
Oh, it really is. And the human body and our brain is just insane with how much we can adapt to anything. So once you reach that and you push past it, you have a new threshold that you have to break. And it's just, it's exciting.
Yeah. Do you think that you'll do jiu-jitsu forever?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I am hoping that my body will hold up through it. I'm trying to take the efforts to make sure that happens because I really would love to be the old lady on the mats that could probably still kick some ass.
This is something that I have a lot of friends that are involved in jiu-jitsu and in like other grappling arts. And there is a certain amount of prehab that is required for doing anything that's athletic. And like, you know, we know in jiu-jitsu that knees and shoulders are a big problem. Like, you know, as an athlete, you should be working on your knees and shoulders. You should be working on your prehab exercises. You know, if you have a tendency to have, you know, injuries in whatever. Now, there's always going to be like, you know, people are always going to break fingers and stuff like that. That's going to happen, you know. But like, when it comes to the structural components of your body, you have to. Now, I'm going to caveat that. Sometimes I meet people and I'm like, oh, you should try martial arts. And like, oh, I need to get in better shape before I do it. Don't create barriers to your own success. Just if you want to learn martial arts, show up, start training.
You'll get in shape.
Yeah, it'll happen. You know, as long as you don't eat like I do, you'll lose weight and you'll be healthy. But, you know, once you start training, if you don't love working out, you don't have to, but you just need to definitely do the things that are going to be, you know, adding to your longevity. And some of that also is recovery, you know, which I think you pointed out earlier. Like, you can't over, you know, you can't go crazy. You have to create a sustainable plan, you know, and be honest. Like, for you, honesty was, hey, Muay Thai is not really what's interesting me here, and the amount of whatever damage or work I'm putting into it isn't worth, you know, the time that I could be spending in jiu-jitsu.
Exactly. There's also, this is kind of a thing that I talk to girls that train, especially when they're just getting into it, because we see a lot of the men throw themselves into working out and doing jiu-jitsu 5-6 days a week. And they're doing rounds on rounds on rounds. And unfortunately, our bodies are just different. So we do need a little bit more rest than men.
Yeah.
And that sucks, but it is how it is. So I try to like talk to them about how to learn efficiently. So you're making the most of the roles that you do have, since that's been something that I had to learn. I can't just do every single round at an open mat. I have to sit back and watch, and I have to make sure that I have a purpose for every role.
Yeah. Do you, that's interesting, because I feel like you have to learn how to learn. You know, I know that's kind of crazy. Do you feel that, you know, learning jiu-jitsu for women is fundamentally different, or do you feel that it's the same?
I think it's the same for everyone. I think that women are going to have an easier job learning how to learn, actually.
Okay, why is that?
Because we're forced to.
All right.
We have to learn how to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's, it's easier when you're forced to do something.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a choice, then you're just going to figure it out. But with men, they can use their strength. They can get out of stuff.
Yeah.
But for us, we have to learn every technique exactly correct if we want it to work.
I mean, I think it's also true with just small people in general,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's probably a woman that's like listening that's like 6'5". That's like, I do jiu-jitsu. I don't need to, you know. I get that if anything.
Yeah, sure.
I've met some of them. Like, there are bigger women that do jiu-jitsu as well. It's not just
I've rolled with them. It's yeah. They're amazing.
So, I guess, when did you start creating, like, martial arts-related content?
Probably, like, when I got a TikTok.
Okay.
I didn't really do much content creation at all anyways, besides Twitch. And with Twitch, I'm lazy. I did not put time and effort into my stream. After I stopped playing World of Warcraft for that channel, I just put my camera, like my phone, on to stream, set it on a tripod, and I would lift.
Okay.
And that's my content. So yeah.
This is me working out.
And
people watched, which is what is ridiculous.
I do clickbait titles such
oh,
as
no.
butt stuff though. It's squats.
No, Calcucate. Don't do the click. This is something I've actually had a real conversation with people about, where like my titles on YouTube are very much like learn to throw the jab. People are like, no, man, you gotta make like a crazy title, like your jab sucks. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that. And they're like, you have to if you want views, man. It breaks my heart a little bit, to be honest with you. Like, I know, man. I'm telling you right now, if I was a beautiful woman, double the followers, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. You know,
1,000%.
Like, I'm not trying to take anything away from anyone, because there's people that are making great content. I think you make great content, and you know, obviously, you know, you are an attractive lady, but I think that your content isn't like leaning on that. Like, you're making legitimate content, you know. It's a unique perspective. It's talking about what it's like to be a woman in martial arts. Do you get feedback from like women that do martial arts, or do you, what is the feedback like?
I do. Obviously, I think I'm saying what every single woman has in their head when I do those videos. They just don't necessarily know how to articulate it or don't have a space to do that.
Sure.
Someone said, oh, you've got a lot of people asking you all these questions. And I said, well, that's fine, but they could just ask the woman that's on the mat next to them.
Yeah.
Because it's the same stuff. We all go through it.
As a woman in martial arts, do you feel like, you know, are there things that women should know that they don't know when they first start training?
The same stuff that everyone should know when they first start training.
Okay.
Really. It's tap early, tap often.
Fair.
The cliche that always is there. And just show up for a while is the thing. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, some women get scared away.
Yeah. Why do you feel that is?
There's not a lot of us there.
Yeah.
And it's hard to identify with just a group of sweaty guys that are trying to kill each other.
Something that you said, this is kind of when, like, so, I mean, obviously the TikTok algorithm is, you know, I don't know, a mystery to all people.
I don't understand it at all.
So, I don't know if because I follow you on Instagram or because I'm friends with your friend Sammy Ryan, if, you know, TikTok started, like, recommending your videos to me, and I don't consume that much TikTok, you know, but I remember there was a video up and I watched it and you were saying that, you know, you were saying that one of the ways that you could judge the quality of a program was, you said women were the like canary in the coal mine when it came to the quality of a program.
I stole that from an article, actually.
Thief.
I didn't cite it because I don't remember what article it was.
You've made me a plagiarist because I've cited you multiple times on this channel.
That's
and now I've just discovered that I am a fraud. Well, this is my last podcast, guys. I hope that you enjoyed it. Thank you for Calcucate ruining it all. Someone somewhere is like, I wrote that, you son of a bitch.
I will find that article just so that we can cite it somewhere.
Isn't there like a quote, like, the internet's wild, said Albert Einstein or something? Like,
right.
Yeah, it's fine, man. Nobody quotes anybody these days.
I like to give people credit.
I can't say that online. It's not appropriate. Never mind.
And that whole article was about, if there's a healthy learning environment and it's safe, then there are going to be women that stay and they're going to go up through the ranks. So if you see a brown belt, black belt woman there that has been in this gym for a long time, and there are several other lower belts there, that's probably going to be a safe place for you.
Yeah. Do you, since you started creating content, do you feel like you have, do you feel like you're more involved in the community, or do you feel like, how does that translate?
It gives me space to say the stuff that's in my head.
Okay.
I have a lot of girls come to me to ask advice on competing and stuff. And this just happened because Pan is happening here right now.
Sure.
So a teammate went and she went 1-1. And she immediately asked, like, came to text me afterwards and was like, I can't deal with these competition nerves. How do I do this?
Yeah.
And I hate this about myself sometimes because, like, I'm just a blue belt. Like, what on earth do I know? And that's how I qualify everything is, like, take this with, this is just my, what's in my head. But I just went off on the soliloquy of how to deal with this, which is, like, planning. And that's the only, and nerves are good because that means you care. But I don't think that's really what she wanted, is me to, like, go off on this tangent citing Donaher and people like that. But that's what I do.
What do you think she wanted?
compete more. I think that's what she wanted. I think she just wanted to hear someone say compete more.
Yeah. Which is an invalid advice.
No, that's great advice.
Yeah. I think that across the board, your level of training dictates your confidence. So like if when I put together a fight camp, my goal is when my person walks into the start of fight camp, they have all the tools they need to be successful. We're just going to build their confidence through that camp. So when they get to, when it's time for them to compete, like they have all the confidence. You're still going to have nerves. I have nerves. I have nerves when you're competing. I have nerves when my guy's competing. I have nerves when everyone's competing.
The nerves are my favorite part.
Really?
I love it so much.
Why?
I have no idea, but that's part of the addicting quality. I've always liked that. I mean, like I performed as a kid, so like that same exact nerves every time.
It's interesting because I think that's one of the things that we're in. I had a buddy that was, I don't remember where he got this from. I'm sure he got it from somewhere else. So if you guys know where, you can comment on the feed, please. But I had a buddy that said that the reason that rock stars do drugs is not because they hate their lives or because they're depressed or whatever. They do drugs because they're trying to chase the feeling that they got from being on stage. And they don't get that feeling when they're not on stage in front of 60,000 people. So screw it. I'm going to do drugs on a Tuesday. And it becomes addictive, you know? But that is, I think that is when it comes to competing, there's no feeling like, you know, being in front of and being there and being like, you know, like I always tell my guys, like you're going in there, the other guy's trying to kill you. Like that's the way you need to think about it. So it is very unique. I have a friend though that we talk about this quite often, kind of privately, and she's not willing to go on the record about this, but she feels that watching jiu-jitsu competitions is quite boring. Now she's a high level jiu-jitsu competitor, but she feels like it's, you know, for her, she doesn't really like, you know, if there's a jiu-jitsu tournament in town that she's not in and she doesn't have any of her teammates competing in it, she's not like jonesing to go watch it.
I wouldn't do that either.
Do you find jiu-jitsu competitions to be interesting?
Yes. But I tend to just watch people that are in my weight class.
Okay.
It's important to me to see how they move.
Yeah.
And what things that they are focusing on.
So you're doing that more as an as a learning tool.
Yeah.
Wherein, like, are there any other sports that you watch that you like enjoy?
I like hockey, but I don't really watch it often.
Okay. So you'd go to a hockey, like a hockey game. Yeah. Yes. Would you, but you wouldn't go to like a local jiu-jitsu tournament that you're not involved in?
Not unless I had someone there that I wanted to see.
Why is that?
Specifically. I don't know why that is. It's not a professional level. Like, I would go to watch ADCC.
Yeah. Did you go to PANS?
I'm going on Sunday.
Okay.
It has been weekdays.
Yeah, that is hard about jiu-jitsu. The higher level tournaments, sometimes they start like on Tuesday or Wednesday. It's kind of weird.
Only the lower levels have to go on the weekdays.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's,
I'm
you know,
old now,
that's where my friends
so
are.
So I get to go on Saturdays. Yeah.
What a weird game we're playing where you're 29 and that's like a super old, right?
I was just so excited to be in the Masters division where I can tell people how crazy I am and how I have just mats in my living room and that's my furniture and a giant whiteboard to map out things.
We'll keep that in.
Okay,
for
great.
Sure. Yeah, and
great.
that's awesome. I think that that's kind of, but is that is inherently a jiu-jitsu thing though? Because I know a lot of people that do Muay Thai, they don't necessarily have a bag at their house, or they don't have like I have a bag and I have all this other stuff, but I don't really use it that much. But every person I know that's like a high level jiu-jitsu person, they'll like do a room, or they'll like do their attic, or they'll do their garage or their basement or something, matted up, like almost pretty immediately. Do you think that's inherently a part of the culture?
I think that people who love jiu-jitsu really love jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
So they become very obsessed and they'll make it their entire lives.
Yeah.
And when something is your entire life, normally your significant other is going to be a part of it. And if you have kids, your kids are going to be a part of it. So you might as well have a space to make sure you can get work in.
That's funny because my preference is actually, like when I first got involved in martial arts, just like anyone else, right? Like, I got super obsessed to start off with, and I've talked about this on a previous episode, where you start to examine, like, where did the art come from, and what's it like, and who are these people, and who are the players, and, like, what's the tournament looks like, and, you know, like, I looked at, like, the spiritual aspects of martial arts, and, like, all of this other, like, very, like, nerdy aspects of martial arts, you know? But early on, I remember thinking, man, if I just met someone that did this, that was like, you know, as a significant other, this would be so fucking cool, right? Like, this is all I ever wanted. And then I had that, and I was like, this shit is horrible. I never want to do this again. And now I'm on the exact opposite side of that. Like, when I tell people what I do for a living, I want them to be like, what is that? And I'm like, it's crazy. You don't want to know about it. And they're like, okay, cool. Not that I don't want to share things with them. I just, for me, it's like, I always say that, like, the gym is my sanctuary, and I don't want, like, anyone that's there. Like, I don't want, like, I don't like it when my other students bring, like, their kids in and stuff. And I'm like, look, this is not family time. This is, like, training time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I could not date someone who did martial arts.
So my boyfriend, I did not meet through jiu-jitsu. He actually had quit 5 years before he met me.
Really?
He got his purple belt. He had some breathing problems and just quit the sport.
That was it, huh?
So I met him. We started talking, and I started training later that year. And then I started competing. And I happened to be going to his old gym.
Okay.
Just like completely by chance. And so he just thought, well, I'm not going to go to your tournaments and not compete and not train. So he started training again.
Do you enjoy that?
I do. He is a brown belt now and is very intelligent. So I have someone to help me with absolutely everything I need in the sport, yeah, which is nice. He is my coach when we travel. And it's great most of the time.
Okay.
It is great most of the time.
Fair. That's awesome. That's a good answer.
There are the times when you just don't want to deal with it. Like, you, it's hard to separate coach, yeah, and significant other a lot. So if it's a very frustrating outcome of a thing, you, like, don't want your significant other to be in your face, right? And you don't really, but you want, like, a pep talk from your coach.
Yeah. Sometimes my like parents of younger students will be like, wow, man, they act so much different when they're with you. And I'm like, well, first off, I only have them for an hour or two a day. Secondly, if they misbehave, I throw them or something. So they're very aware that, like, I'm crazy. But then also, like, I'm not their dad. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different relationship. And I think that's very, very hard. Like, having someone that is your significant other or your mom or your dad or whoever also being your coach, that's hard. You know, like, you could be the best martial arts coach on earth, or you could be the best sports coach on earth. Like, it's complicated. I saw this meme or, like, a video or something a couple years ago, and it was like, you know, whenever I was late for practice, my coach always made me run laps. My coach was my dad, and he drove me to practice. And I was like, yeah, dude, like, that's intense. You know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, you're late, you got to run. Well, I'm late, dad, because we were late. Well, that's life. You know, you got to run, man. Like, being, I like clearly defined relationships. And maybe that is a byproduct of how crazy I am, but I don't really do super well with shades of gray. And I think that I couldn't do it. Like, I, you know, there's been times in the past when I was in a relationship where we were arguing about something, and then it's like, oh, time to go to the gym. And then we both go to the gym, and we're still kind of like bickering with each other about whatever. And it ruins training. And I've had couples that, you know, were in training camp together because they both had fights on the same card, and they're, you know, fighting at home, and they're coming to the gym and they're fighting. We're trying to train. It's like, no, this is not a great... It's not a great setup for me.
You definitely have to have boundaries. I never intended to date anyone in the sport. That was...
Yeah.
And even, like, when he came back in, we were in that situationship sort of deal.
Yeah.
So I thought, cool, I'm not dating anyone in the sport.
We're just in a situationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was never intentional. And I always wanted a rule of not dating anyone in the sport, especially not in a, in the same gym.
Yeah.
Because it just makes things messy.
Yeah.
And I would never want something to go awry and then not be able to go to my safe space.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I tell my guys and my girls a lot, too. Like, I just don't, I would prefer that you do not, like, as a student, as one of my students, and I, my students know this very clearly, I just don't think that that's what this place is for. Like, you have a very different situation because you met outside of the gym. You got involved in the sport. They used to be involved in the sport. They were like, oh, you know what? I want to start doing it again. That's very different. But for me, it's like, I'm really big on, like, if you're at the gym and there's someone there that you're interested in, man, take that so slow because, like, there's 2.73 billion people in the world of the opposite sex. You can find somebody else. If you're into both sexes, there's 7 billion options. Like, you're going to make this work. If you believe there's more than two sexes, there's still 7 billion options. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, you have options. Like, please don't poo-poo in the little pool that we're currently swimming in, which is like 100 people.
I mean, it's hard to meet people in real life nowadays, so I get why that happens, but it's just not worth it.
I mean, look, I get this. You meet people in your hobbies. You meet people in your job. If you're still in school, you meet people in school. I mean, that's it. You might randomly meet someone at, like, Publix, at a grocery store, or at the park, or at the dog park, or something weird, but that's rare.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I get it. You know, I just know that it's not, I rarely see it work out in that setting, you know, and when it does work out, awesome, but also I can think of a lot of times where it didn't work out and both people quit training because of it, you know, and I also feel like often women feel like when it doesn't work out that they're the ones that have to leave,
yeah,
which I don't necessarily think is makes a lot of sense either, but I get that it's a male-dominated environment, so that makes sense, you know. Yeah,
that's just not an option for me, so that's... He'll have to deal if that ever happens.
Well, that's not fair, though, because you train at 14 different gyms or something crazy. He's going to leave all 14 gyms?
He doesn't have to leave. He just has to deal with me being there.
You're going to have to roll the dice on gyms. You're like, oh, that's
you
yours.
Have this, one,
this is
one.
Yours.
Custody of the gyms.
Yeah, right. Now, do you... So you train at a bunch of different gyms. This is maybe the last question that we'll ask. Is there one specific gym that you consider like your gym or your instructor? Like who's... Jiu-Jitsu is complicated because there's a belt structure.
Right.
How many stripes do you have on your blue belt now?
Three.
Three. So you're starting to head towards like, you know, maybe you're maybe a few, you know, a year or something, year and a half away from, you know, being a purple belt.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be that person?
Chiago Dominguez.
Okay. All right. Very cool.
So I'm under De La Hiva USA.
All right.
IBJJF, obviously, like they have a very organized system of how you're under a school. So I am under De La Hiva USA. I love Chiago. He is one of the best humans that exists on the planet. So I want to remain under him no matter where I am.
Yeah.
And he's okay with that.
Yeah.
No matter where I am. And I pop in. He owns a gym and then also teaches at other gyms in the area.
All right.
And is the head black belt for other gyms as well as his. So it's...
That must be very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, this is one of those jobs where you gotta work. You know, I do a lot of stuff like the podcast, the YouTube channel, judging, promoting, commentary,
and he has a normal person job too.
That's so much, dude.
It's insane.
That's so much.
I don't. He's a superhuman. I don't get it.
Yeah. But. Calcu Kate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Was it fun? Did you enjoy it?
Yes, it was fun. I don't often get a chance to word vomit about jiu-jitsu all the time. So.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's. That's kind of what the whole podcast is about. Like, I want it to be an opportunity where martial artists can come on and talk about martial arts, but not so much about, like, I said this to you earlier, about the entertainment aspect of martial arts. Because everyone's talking about, like, what's happening in the UFC or this drama or that drama. that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm interested in talking to a blue belt competitor that's been training for a couple years to see like what their thoughts are, because I'm sure there's a lot of blue belt competitors that are sitting out there that have never heard another blue belt competitor talk in an intellectual manner outside of maybe sitting around with their friends after an open mat or something. So that's kind of the idea, you know, like I feel like these conversations need to be had more. Like, you know, people need to understand that, like, what is the perspective of, you know, Calcucate? And that's really one of the cool things. Again, like, I want to plug your TikTok and your Instagram, and you have a YouTube channel, and I'm pretty sure we can look up Calcucate on all those things and we'll find you.
Yeah, the YouTube is just unedited matches, so I don't know how.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, though, right? Like, it's an opportunity for people to see what a competitive match looks like. Do you get, like, ridiculous comments on that stuff?
On my YouTube, no.
No?
No. I like to be really transparent with anyone that views my content.
Yeah.
So I post losses and wins, and I only really ever focus on the losses. I haven't done this in a while because I haven't been able to compete, but I will break down matches and see where things went wrong on my TikTok.
Do you rewatch your fights?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to.
Do you find that you are, do you get a lot of good information out of that, or do you find that it's like, it can be a little bit negative as well?
It's all good information. All information is good information.
Yeah.
It's definitely a place to point out mistakes that I made, and I have been able to point them out and not make them again in several situations.
So you would encourage competitors to rewatch their film?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%. Over and over.
Okay. I mean, I don't know that I'd go 100% on the over. And yeah, watch it for years, man.
Until your next one.
How many matches do you have on your YouTube channel? Do you know?
I have no idea. At least one per tournament.
Could you guess? You have a decent number of videos up. More than 20?
Probably like 30.
30. That's super cool. I looked at your YouTube today. I mostly consume your Instagram because I follow you on Instagram. And your TikTok, which is, I think, a little bit more, obviously, not, I don't want to say edited, but it's a little bit more like curated or created, where with the YouTube, it is just kind of unedited matches.
I just toss them on there. So if someone wanted to see what happened, I can say, here you go. Here's a link.
Yeah. That is super cool, though, because I think when you're a competitor and you're watching other competition videos, sometimes you're just seeing the highlights or whatever. And as a competitor, you have to understand what built up to something or how it got to that point.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Calcucate.
Oh, thank you. It was so fun.
I'll keep talking about you on the podcast and you'll keep not listening. So I'll
listen.
I'll be wildly, flies. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Obviously, please like, comment, share all over social media. It helps more than you can ever imagine. And have an amazing day.